Well, the coffee is being delivered here on the roundtable panel. Very nice. Thank you, Colleen. We appreciate that. I get my own coffee. I'm a person of the people. It's the roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue.
It's and just because she doesn't like you.
The elitists on the panel who get their coffee delivered include Rosemary Armeo from the University of Albany. Hi, Rosemary.
I don't know whether to respond to that now, because that makes me a person not of the people. I'm an elitist.
Survey said elitist.
I love the highly educated.
And Alan Shartok is here as well, too.
I have nothing to say.
You never get your own coffee. Rich Honan, who is very highly paid by the hour. He's a corporate attorney, but doesn't even have coffee today. Very impressive. Rich, welcome back to the show.
I get it next door at the,
good
the
for
place
you.
Next door. Yes.
You see, you are a person of the people.
Yes, yes.
Way to go.
And Ray, you are such a professional. You have no idea the amount of comings and goings in the studio while the light is on, while Ray is trying to do the news, and
something.
It's unbelievable.
He complains.
As a broadcaster for some 27 years, the light is sacred. You don't go in the room when the light is on.
The red light.
Yes.
The
red light. And apparently that doesn't apply in public radio.
It's not
radio.
Red. It's white.
No, the light out there.
The outside.
Outside.
Is
the
it red,
red light, yeah.
I thought
I
have to
nobody
go look
ever looks
now.
At
I thought
it
was
so
white. Yeah,
know?
I've never looked at it.
I do.
Right.
I've been trained by Joe and by Ray.
The email
you're
address.
You're just a better person, a better class of
no,
person.
No, I'm just always learning.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. And before we start with today's topics, had an email from one of the panelists yesterday who said they were having a discussion about Zika. Now, I must confess, I did not hear the entire program.
Do you want me to set it up then?
Well, I know Hillary Clinton calling on Congress to return to Washington to pass emergency funding to fight the Zika virus. She's, quote, very disappointed lawmakers left Washington. I assume that is the Republican lawmakers she's disappointed with. They did this without approving any of the $1.9 billion that President Obama requested. Apparently, there was some discussion on the program.
There was.
That this is the Republicans'
fault.
I
posed the question, why would the Republicans not want to deal with that legislation? It affects Florida, which they very much are interested in. Marco Rubio is a powerful Republican who obviously has a stake in this. What would be the plus side? Because we're a bunch of liberals here, and we're all bashing Republicans for not doing this. Hillary gets this clear ride to bash Republicans. What is the thinking on the Republican side? And I thought Rich might be able to voice that.
Well, have you done your homework, Rich?
And before Rich gets to go, I want to say I did answer. I laid out why.
What was
I thought,
the answer?
Why I thought this was happening, because it was a good opportunity for both Obama and Hillary Clinton to make fools out of the Republicans. And they did exactly that.
No. That's not the question, Alan. It's not why would the Democrats do it. That's self-evident. Why would the Republicans not handle Zika legislation? What's in it for them? And you said because they don't want to do anything that Obama wants and blah, blah, blah. The usual things we say when we don't like what the Republicans say.
Okay, so apparently you have appointed Rich, who is not a Republican, as the spokesperson for the Republicans.
Oh,
so
come on. WAMC has made him their resident conservative.
What has it made you?
Apologist.
All right, Rich, go ahead.
Well,
there you go.
I just got off the conservative conference call with Paul
you
Ryan.
You have the talking points.
Did you get your
Mr.
orders?
Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
Yes, and Barry Goldwater.
Is he still alive?
I don't think so.
No.
I'll check that out while
But we reserved a spot for him on the call.
That's good.
So if Paul Ryan walked in right now, other than
he would say, "Oh, I didn't really know about that. I'll get back to you."
I love the way you ask Rich a question, and you don't allow him to answer.
Well played, he can handle it.
Are you saying that I'm disrespecting him? I think you're the one who gets mail about disrespecting the other
only
panelists.
One letter from somebody who said that I interrupted Rosemary and Libby, and it's quite the other way around.
Well, now you're interrupting everybody.
Rich, but she asked Rich a question.
We're giving Rich time to come up with a good answer. As soon as he began
to answer, she jumped in.
You know, his hourly goes up if you don't let him talk.
$1,000 an hour.
All right, Rich, what do you got?
Well, if Paul walked in right now, I think other than having, you know, the best abs in the studio, he would point out respectfully to Rosemary, I think, that the House, in fact, passed the Zika package. And yes, there was some money shifting. The Obama administration asked for $1.9 billion. The House passed $1.1 billion in new money and then wanted to take about $500 million from still unused Ebola money. But he would point out that it was passed and it was then, it was then filibustered by the Democrats in the Senate and which is true. And they defeated the bill before the summer recess. The Democrats, I think, would then say we defeated the bill, and because we didn't like the version of it, and the Republicans in the House who passed the bill that the Democrats filibustered would say, we think that while we're fine with spending the money, we want to shift some of the funds, which everybody was okay with. But they said they would say that we think the lead agencies should be, you know, the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control, you know, National Institute of, infectious diseases and allergies, in the other version of the bill, a lot of the money was being allocated to Planned Parenthood. Which is obviously the political, third rail, it's waving a red flag in front of the Republicans. But more to the point, the Republicans said, the use of this was really a turf grab for Planned Parenthood to bring its message to the Latin American countries
to abort babies with defects.
A lot of Latin American countries. And by the way, I'm not getting into the abortion debate because
I don't want to.
That's another program.
But the answer would be we passed the bill. You guys tried to make Planned Parenthood kind of the lead agency, kind of, and then we passed it without that, and you guys filibustered it, and now there's no money.
So the reason I wanted you to talk about it is that I saw this perhaps as an area of agreement between us, just like gun control.
Yes, there is an area of agreement.
If you simply took some of the package and not all of it, we'd at least move forward, which we're not doing.
Exactly.
So I do think, unlike the other panelists yesterday, that Democrats are partly responsible too.
I think.
However, the Planned Parenthood argument in this case, abortion aside, I don't want to get into that either. Actually, I do anytime you want. But
no, because we agree.
It is the leading agency that sees poor women for obstetrical care. So why should it not get money? That's a more difficult argument to make.
And I think the answer to that would be, first of all, I agree with you. There is a
right.
point of agreement. And that point of agreement, by the way, is really easy. Right now, there's $500 million sitting in the unspent Ebola fund.
Immediately.
And if you talk to the head of, I think his name is Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci or Fauci, I don't know if I pronounced it, but you always see him.
He's
everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And NIH, well, actually, again, the National Institute for Infectious Diseases, he says that $200 million would get them well on their way on a vaccine. So if it was, Rosemary, if it was you and me running the world,
do it.
We'd say, you guys argue about abortion in third world countries, which I think is going to take more than a week to fix. Meanwhile, we'll take $200 million of the $500 Ebola money. Give it to this guy, start working on a vaccine, and then at least we're moving forward on something. Just finding an area of agreement, a realistic agreement, and then putting off the big policy issues till later.
Sound reasonable?
It does. And, Rich,
good
we
deal.
Also have a point of
what
agreement about
next?
Paul Ryan's abs. I have denigrated other parts of his
yeah,
anatomy,
you called him a eunuch.
Yeah, I do still think that.
And what investigative journalism did you do to find that out?
I have been asked that.
Undercover, presumably.
Undercovers.
Listen, I spend every morning at 5 o'clock at the Gilderland Y, and I will never reach Paul Ryan Ossity.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Growth hormone, Rich. That's what I recommend. Hey, let's take a break here. It's the roundtable. It is, I call it the Funorama. It's the roundtable panel. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Green Toad Bookstore, Oneonta's independent bookseller with books and antiques, educational toys, home decor, and gifts. GreenToadBookstore.com. The Glimmerglass Festival, presenting La Boheme, Sweeney Todd, The Thieving Magpie, and The Crucible, through August 27th in Cooperstown. Glimmerglass.org. The Mount, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Touchstones, a literary series hosted by Kate Bollock and featuring New York Times film critic and author A.O. Scott this afternoon. EdithWharton.org. And Arco Management, offering apartments at Hudson Art House, a renovated historic textile factory in Troy, New York, shared work areas and art gallery on site. HudsonArtHAUS.com.
Thank you.
the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe, 9:23 on your now Thursday morning. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan are on the panel today, and the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And, well, we've discussed Zika at your request, Rosemary.
Baltimore is my next request.
Okay. Well, we'll do that. That's going to be a longer conversation, mm-hmm. I would think. I wanted to bring up the State Department has turned over 44 previously unreleased Hillary Clinton email exchanges that the Democratic presidential nominee failed to include among 30,000 private messages she turned over to the government last year. They show her interacting with lobbyists, political and Clinton Foundation donors, and business interests during her tenure as Secretary of State. The conservative legal group Judicial Watch obtained the emails as part of its lawsuit against the State Department. They cover Clinton's first 3 months as Secretary of State in early 2009, a period for which Clinton did not turn over any emails to the State Department last year. The government found the newly disclosed messages during a search of agency computer files from longtime Clinton aide Huma Abedin. Donald Trump, of course, accusing Hillary Clinton of pay-to-play and says her behavior is illegal. Republicans have alleged that the emails show improper influence on the State Department by the Clinton family's charitable foundation, a claim Clinton denies. Trump says it shows that under Clinton you pay and you're getting things. He says it's, quote, really, really bad, and is comparing Clinton to disgraced Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who was imprisoned for corruption. I'll throw it out there in the last 5 minutes of this half hour.
Well, first of all, let me just go and say this is as American as apple pie. This is the way that people do it. The Post, POST, has a story this morning talking about all the people who gave the Clinton Foundation money and what they got for it. In other words, they got stuff back for it. You know, you put money in, you take something out. If you don't say, if you give me this, then I'll do this, then you're not breaking the law. But there isn't a politician alive who hasn't in some way helped out somebody who calls up and says, can you get me an appointment here? Can you do this? Can you do that? And that's all been done. It doesn't justify it. I don't like it. I've never liked it. But the Supreme Court is in on it now because in their McDonald decision, they come down and they say, you know, it has to be very, very specific to send anybody to jail.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, except to the extent, or it's hard to disagree with that. The Clintons, however, have taken it to an art form, and they've inserted kind of the new criteria, this new idea, this new component of, you're not just giving money to my campaign fund, you're actually giving money to me. You know, it's my foundation.
Well, it isn't to them. Don't personally. In fact, 89% of the money that goes to the foundation is used in actual programming. This is from Independence. I'm not going to disagree totally with you, but that part of it is wrong.
Except the programmatic money includes things like staff salaries and people on the staff for people like Bill Clinton and a lot of their political operatives.
No, Bill Clinton operatives. Does come from
the, right. So okay. if we follow it, you know, right from Watergate, right? Follow the money. If you follow the money, this is the difference here, if there is one, is that it's actually personally benefiting the person in power as opposed to benefiting their campaign fund, which at this point might just be more of a subtle distinction, but it's money that's going right into her pocket.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. And I got to tell you this. There are two candidates for president of the United States. I voted for Bernie Sanders. That didn't work out. Now I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton is much better than Donald Trump. On the other hand, as a college president, I know very well, once said of somebody else, she'll bear watching.
Well, no, that's, can I just, I know you're trying to get in here, but that is my main problem with this story. Who put in the FOI to actually get and look at the emails? Everybody else was just, you know, bloviating about the emails.
It was Judicial Watch.
It was Judicial Watch, a conservative group that hates Hillary Clinton. Look at their website.
Okay.
It's just, why wasn't the New York Times doing it?
Time out. And you guys were talking about Assange, and I believe someone called him a traitor yesterday.
How can it be a traitor? He's Australian.
Hang on. Here's the thing. Oftentimes, when the information of a whistleblower or someone who files a FOIL comes out, it's, oh, this person did the right thing. Now we know. But in this case, a lot of people are spinning it saying, oh, well, who asked for the information?
No.
Isn't
no.
the information the important thing?
You're putting words in my mouth. The information is the most important thing. And I applaud Judicial Watch for going after it. I want to know why the liberal media, the so-called liberal media, did not. This is legitimate. And if the New York Times or the Washington Post came out with this story, you would not be hearing that criticism.
Well, I think the Washington Post did have it pretty prominently today.
Yeah, but they picked it up based on judicial
watch.
Okay, yeah. You make a point.
They weren't the requesting organization.
Exactly. They didn't put in the 2 years of work it took to get those emails.
You make a point. Now, the CNN, an interesting paragraph here in the CNN piece from last night, and I'll quote. This is from Daniela Diaz, Pamela Brown, and Elise Labatt. Earlier this year, as the investigation into Clinton's private email server was in full swing, several FBI field officers approached the Justice Department asking to open a case regarding the relationship between the State Department and the Clinton Foundation, according to a law enforcement official. At the time, DOJ declined because it had looked into allegations surrounding the Clinton Foundation around a year earlier and found there wasn't sufficient evidence to open a case. Aren't the optics of this in combination with Comey's...
Terrible. It's terrible.
Bad, right?
You know, the Clintons have a whole history of doing this stupid, unnecessary
That's
stuff.
Right. And it's greed.
I mean, they took $200,000 worth of furniture and gifts from the White House and then returned it. You know, it was just sloppiness. They didn't look at the paperwork to decide whether it was theirs or the White House.
You don't know what they
Ridiculous.
Did.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
You don't know what they did. You don't know if they it was just sloppiness or if they got caught and they had to return it. Or you don't know that.
It was stuff like ottomans and couches. You know, it was just sloppy.
Was the ottoman given to them by the King of Persia? I don't know.
Case they of the $200,000 ottoman.
Actually, they gave it back and then the government gave it back to the Clintons said, no, you can have it. It's silly stuff.
I repeat myself. She's going to get elected president, and she will bear watching.
All right. Well, listen, that is where we will leave the first half hour. And the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in. This is a good time. Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan, and Alan Shartok, yours truly, Ray Graff. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Oh, it's on. I'll stop hitting my coffee cup. Keeping the beat.
What was that about obeying the lights?
He turned it on. The engineer is doing what he wants, and he should be following my orders. It's 9:34 just about here on a Thursday morning.
You were once an engineer.
Yes, I was.
And you?
Choo-choo Charlie. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. Oh, the fun we have. It's the roundtable panel. Rich Honan is here. And Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok, and you at home via the email, don't you know? Alan, do we have anything?
We do.
Okay.
John says, typical Clinton sophistical parsing of language to cover their shady behavior.
I think he meant like
S-O-P-H-I-S-T-I-C-A-L.
All right. Sophistical?
Sophistical.
Okay. What do you mean sophistical?
Norm Crosby writing in now all of a sudden?
How do you know he doesn't mean sophisticated?
I don't think so.
And by the way, that's how you get into the dictionary. You make up a new word, and eventually people use it.
That's the name of my lounge band. Ray Graff and the Sophisticals.
Let's not undercut the guy's email.
All right, fine. Let's
read
that.
Cut that out.
Substance,
okay,
people.
Now here we are. Why are we not hearing about the three deaths connected to the DNC within this past few weeks? Lisa?
Not hearing about the deaths. Well, I mean, that's still conspiracy theory, right? And now Assange jumped into that by offering, $20,000?
We talked about this yesterday.
There's
a police reward, and Assange enriched it. And his statement was that we're not confirming or denying he was the source of the Democratic
leaks. Right, so why do it?
Leaks, because he said... Even attacks against suspected leakers to WikiLeaks is a matter of concern to us.
Right. And he came up with $20,000?
Yeah.
That's a pretty lame reward.
It's 40
you think
altogether.
The Russians could have done better than that.
Yeah, right. 500 million rupees.
That's funny. Okay. Ray, there's one thing about Ray. That's funny.
All right, what else you got?
Okay, Megan says, hi, panel.
Hi.
I'd like to hear your reaction to Trump's The Parent appealed. It says the parent. I think it means a parent. The parent appealed to the Second Amendment people to do something about Hillary. I personally am alarmed that he gets a pass.
That was 48 minutes of the program yesterday.
Oh, my God. Yesterday's news, not playing.
Gets a pass on this. Wow.
Oh, no, that was all they talked about yesterday. You missed the show yesterday. Yeah. You can find it online at WAMC.org. Grab the Epicac and listen in.
Okay. I don't know for a fact, says Susan, that Rich is wrong about the salaries paid to the directors of the foundation, in other words, Bill Clinton. But I strongly suspect he is. The 990 report, all nonprofits must file one for the foundation's public information. The 990 lists highest paid salaries of the foundation as well as income and graphs. Before spouting off on how crooked the foundation is, somebody might want to check out the 990.
Okay.
Fran says, Trump... We miss your show when I head back to Brooklyn, But more importantly, why isn't the press asking every day, where are Trump's tax returns?
Yeah.
And that's from Fran.
I agree.
Okay.
LCSW.
Whatever happened to those transcripts of Hillary's speeches? Did they ever come out to Wall Street?
That was Bernie Sanders. He's a loser.
Oh, you sounded like Trump there.
That's
for
a good answer, really Rosemary.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is not a loser. He's in there in the race, and he is the first president in two decades who has not released his since Richard
Nixon. Well, that's
Nixon.
From the Rosemary.
I am not a crook, Richard Nixon, but the tax returns showed he was a crook.
That's from the Rosemary two wrongs make a right argumentation level. Wait a second.
We
now.
Had a wrong and we fixed it with a new kind of tradition that we gave our tax returns.
I'm asking you a question.
Okay.
Is it possible that because it was raised by Bernie Sanders and not by the contemporary candidate, which is the argument you just made against them,
that Hillary does not owe the transcripts?
Yes.
I don't care about the transcripts.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right.
What else you got?
I got Lawrence.
Well, I mean, anything good?
No.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Mary says, Zika and Planned Parenthood. None of the money for Planned Parenthood in the Democratic proposal would support abortion. The Hyde Amendment bars any federal dollar support for abortions. These new funds would be used to help low-income women living in Zika-affected areas keep from getting pregnant until they can reduce their risk of getting Zika. And Jamie says, I don't know what Jamie says because that's an ad.
Okay.
All right. You want more or not?
No, listen, it's your program.
No, it's your program.
It's my program?
You're the head guy.
All right, you're all fired. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, and actually, we will get back to more of the emails momentarily. You know, is it me or has this been the craziest election season of all time?
It may be the craziest, but it also may be the most important of all times. If you think
okay,
well, we say that
no.
Every 4 years.
I mean, if Trump wins,
okay, I know, yeah,
we've got
Supreme
a different
Court,
kind of country.
Yada yada yada. Right, but
I'm already hearing that 2020 will be more important than 2016. So I don't know. And I wasn't alive during Andrew Jackson. I bet that was a rowdy.
The reason I
was going to say the Rutherford B. Hayes versus Samuel Tilden.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. Right. Yeah,
the reason I asked that rhetorical question was to lead into the story about the guy who climbed up with the suction cups up Donald Trump's tower in New York City.
Nice.
What the heck is up with that?
That's right out of Archer. Does anybody watch Archer?
Yes.
Right out of Archer. It was great.
Apparently, he was doing it wrong, and he was in real danger of falling down. Apparently,
what was he doing wrong?
Well,
I didn't hear that.
I guess he didn't have the suction cups right or something.
Kind of
but apparently,
so they saved his life.
People who have done these things say he was in real danger of falling off the tower. But
why have we not heard his name yet? Why has he not been identified?
Well, we don't
publicly.
Know.
He's got to sign his book deal first.
Yeah, you make a point.
I wonder if Trump gets the licensing rights to any of that, probably.
Oh, he'd love that, probably.
Yeah, he'll make money.
Is it a crime to climb up a building? You need a permit or something to do that?
Well, didn't they arrest the World Trade Center?
But yeah, he got out of it. Yeah.
All right, Shartok is now obviously disgusted, so we'll move on to more serious topics.
Sorry,
you all right,
Alan.
There, Alan? Okay. Oh,
he doesn't like Spider-Man.
This is actually a serious one. To supporters, zero-tolerance policing has long represented a logical crime-fighting approach. Crack down on minor infractions before they mushroom into more serious disruptive violence.
Yeah.
But a scathing federal government report on the Baltimore Police Department suggests the cost of that strategy outweigh any reduction in crime. The Justice Department released a report yesterday blaming zero-tolerance policing for a legacy of discriminatory law enforcement in which black residents are disproportionately stopped and searched without cause. Did you guys see the press conference yesterday?
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think, Rich?
I think that the zero-tolerance policy has always worked. It worked in New York City.
Right.
It cleaned up New York City. It is, however, subject to abuse. Which seems to happen from time to time, but it prevents crime. It makes for safer neighborhoods. Yes, there were abuses here, and those abuses have to be addressed. But it doesn't go to the core fact of you prevent crime by arresting people who commit crimes. Period.
Well, you know, broken window strategy and all. But on the other hand, Rich, you do hear lots of stories about a lawyer in your class, maybe making, you know, $1 million a year, who happens to be black, is walking down the street and is repeatedly arrested for walking while being black. That's just wrong.
And no one says that's right. And that's,
you know,
there's a million there's a million reasons for that. A lot of them dating, you know, going back to racism. But I'm saying maybe that I said that maybe that's one of the abuses. But
right.
You want to have a safer community. You arrest the people who are committing crimes. Also, you want to have a safer community. Even now, you hear cops all the time saying, you know, in the old days, I could find four kids sitting on a stoop at 4 a.m. and go and say, what are you guys doing sitting on a stoop at 4 a.m? Go home. They can't say that anymore.
No.
Right? Because that's harassment. So it works.
Well, they can. They just can't crack their heads while they're saying
yeah,
go home.
Right.
I again agree with you a lot here, Rich. I lived in Baltimore for a while. It's a very dangerous city, and it's scary. And please note that these policies were enacted in a black city with a black mayor and a black police chief. And there is a benefit to the black community to be without crime. They are the major victims of crime like this, which in Baltimore is mostly drug fueled. So I understand the impetus, but there's a horrible situation in Baltimore right now, as it was in Ferguson. And what we're maybe missing in this discussion is that the Obama Justice Department is really taking a look at police practices and procedures, and that is a very good thing. It's much more efficient than trying to blame one cop or, in the case of Baltimore, five cops for what happens.
Yeah,
it's systemic.
I understand. I just question the Obama Justice Department's agenda. You know, I think it's clearly an anti-cop agenda, and it's clearly kind of an anti-arrest people for crime agenda, and I just don't think that's consistent with safe neighborhoods.
I think this is deeply felt by Obama, who has indicated that even after he leaves the White House, he wants to work on crime reform.
Oh, look,
that is
no
not anti-police. That's not anti-police.
Do you start with crime, or do you go all the way back to slavery and economic economic discrimination of one kind or another, and keeping a whole group of people down? And that is why so many people of color end up in prison, because of the way in which, disgraceful way in which, this country has treated people with darker skins. And so therefore, if you just start at criminal justice reform, what about everything else?
You do. And that's exactly the right question. And the answer is you have to do both. And you do, but you can't do one instead of the other. And look, you know, when the fat guy on the corner of Central Avenue has a heart attack,
right?
Okay, there's two things. You could stand over the guy and say, you know, if you lost 10 pounds and if you exercised more and you had, you know, kind of a daily regimen of eating better, you know, this wouldn't happen.
That's the Allen method.
That's one. Or you could say, hey, you know, this is a low income guy, and because there's not a proliferation of good, food
store,
good and programs and food store, he's forced to buy, you know, low cost, you know, foods with high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And then there's the third guy who says, you're both right, but I'm going to call 911 and start
save
CPR,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
The cops are the guys who, in this scenario, who are doing the CPR. And it doesn't matter to them that if the guy's trying to grab their gun, that it was motivated by racism. Yes, they would like to try and fix that. But at that moment, they're wrestling with the guy who's trying to get their gun.
This report pointed out to people who, in the course of a year, are stopped dozens of times, and they're overwhelmingly black. 95% of those people were black. So they have found police practices that target a certain community. It is not anti-cop to say, we need to look at this. This is not a bad thing. And if you say they're the people who commit crimes, then we're going to throw some other statistics at you showing that's not necessarily true.
No, it would show, then
they're arrested in far greater percentage than they actually live in that city.
No, and there, you know, that's always the, you know, I got to tell you, one of my best friends from college is a guy who became a highly decorated New York City police lieutenant, Jeff Price, great guy. Just saw him last week.
So
at
you
the
have
track.
A pro police point
yeah,
of view.
And, mm-hmm. No, but he's a libertarian guy. And he really is. And you know, he and I have talked about this for years. And you know, what you have to remember is that report, the bullet point from the Baltimore report said, well, 44% of the people arrested were black, but they're only 11% of the city, for example. And the answer is, okay, but what percentage of are they in the neighborhoods in which the police were patrolling? In other words, maybe they're 11% of the entire city, but if there's a neighborhood with a lot of crime, then there might be a larger percentage in that neighborhood, and maybe the percentage that arrested is more consistent with that locality.
There's not that kind of variance in Baltimore. I don't know the figures.
There absolutely
is. I agree they would be interesting.
Those were the numbers. Whole disparate impact.
I think
thing
it's
is,
the reporting. We've not read the original report.
So,
there's
lots of bad stuff in the report, none of which I deny.
Right.
No one denies the abuses.
There is a question, of course, of people's need for safety. I mean, we all know that.
That's the first question.
Yes. And I must say, I get here to Central Avenue every morning at 4 a.m. in the morning. And
why?
Because I have to go to work.
We'll come in later.
Plus, he likes to get good parking.
I can't do that. I have to work.
There's a lot of parking at 4 a.m.
But here's the point. There are some very bad things happening on Central Avenue right in front of this building. And I would love to see an occasional police car, you know, out there. And by the way, they are not only people of color, but they are people who have the same skin color as mine. So
very pale.
Right. But Alan, that's true. But to Rosemary's point, if you were showing up every day at 4 in the morning, walking around in front of WAMC, for example,
sure.
And instead of being, white Alan Chartok, you're a young black guy in a hoodie.
Yeah.
Riding a bike. There's a good chance you get hassled more, by if there's a policeman on the beat.
Well, aren't you making Rosemary's point?
No, I'm saying to her point, and
we do have some points of agreement.
You two have agreed far too much today.
I know, it is kind of...
Because that's reality.
Yeah.
Radio.
We want to try and change that reality, but we also...
I think it's the young male thing, too. I mean, if it were a white kid on a bike and a hoodie, I'd also pull to the side of the building and look at him.
Let's just take a quick break here. We have to...
pay some bills.
That's the way they say it in commercial. We've got to pay some bills. It's the roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back on this public radio station.
Support comes from the Dutchess County Fair in Rhinebeck, August 23rd through the 28th. Concerts feature Third Eye Blind, Parmalee with special guest Old Dominion, and Chase Rice. DutchessFair.com for tickets. TJ's Taylor Rental and Party Plus, owners Jim and Tamara Falcone, providing tool and equipment rentals, tents, bounce houses, water slides, and party supplies for events. TJsTaylorRental.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. And Step Up presents An Evening with Garrison Keillor, Tuesday, February 15th, 8 p.m. at The Egg. Tickets on sale Friday, August 12th at 11 a.m. at TheEgg.org or The Egg Box Office, 518-473-1845.
Rich Honan doing some Charles Schulz Peanuts dancing here on the program. Remember those old Christmas, Charlie Brown Christmas Peanuts and, you know.
A treat for the viewers.
Yeah, that's it. That's
that was great stuff.
So anyway, oh, gosh, we still have 9 minutes to go. All right, let's read some letters. Alan?
Okay.
Come on, Big Al. Let's do it.
Big Al, my mother said nobody calls you Al. That's
all right.
It. Okay. Ann says, racism is real. 10,000 bad arrests is not isolated bad apples. It's a systematic and cultural abuse. The fact that cops were told to treat community as criminals, not citizens, is the crux of the problem within the policing culture. And that's from Ann. There's Grace, who says, good morning, Roundtable.
Good morning.
Very nice to hear agreement today on the panel between Rosemary and Rich. But, Rich, it is very irresponsible of you to call Obama anti-police. You are stuck on that talking point and use the Henry Gates incident as your irrefutable proof. Get over it already. If you need to be a person who's always learning, then so does our president.
Is there anybody? Am I the only one who thinks Obama's anti-cop?
Yes.
Okay, I understand in this room I am,
well,
but
he says he's
in
not.
The world?
He says he's not.
Oh,
we
that's
will,
right.
We will all be in the learning curve for generations to understand the race relations in our country. That's from Barbara. And let's see
that's
here.
That's true.
And let's see. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
I love you, Ray. Hey, Ray, did you just suggest that Clinton's refusal to release transcripts of speeches she gave are equivalent to Trump's tax returns?
He said they were worse.
Your snarky little aside.
Yes. Well, guilty.
Completely misses the point that every presidential candidate for decades has released their tax returns. There is a well-established precedent, and the relevance is obvious. To whom is the potential next president indebted?
Oh, I see.
What she said as a private citizen pales in comparison, and she lacks any precedent. Sorry,
wait,
I call.
When was the last time she was a private citizen?
Sorry.
When she was giving the speeches, she had resigned as Secretary of State and was not yet running.
Right. Sorry, I call false equivalency. And by the way, somebody wrote a letter, and it's missing now. I don't know where it is.
Yeah.
But in which they looked up the Clinton tax returns on the Clinton Foundation, and neither Hillary or Bill has listed any income. You have to list any income over $10,000, she says. So I thought I mentioned what?
They don't file income tax. They're a 501c3.
Well, the 990.
And then you pay. You have to list the top five. So if they're not in the top five, they will not be on a 990.
Okay.
Okay, that's it.
Okay. Cynthia says, men of color, until I got to know the Muslim community already in Albany, I did not realize that Muslim men of color walked to morning prayer at the mosque before daybreak. Believe me,
as do Jews.
I know who those people are because it's right
there. That's who you're talking about.
It's right. Yeah. No, believe me, it's not who I'm talking about. And Kathleen says, okay, let's see here. Too much. Kenneth says, is there a point when a candidate becomes so unacceptable a journalist can't simply cover his or her actions but must actively work against the candidate?
Yeah, 2008 when they did that in favor of Obama, and again in 2016 when they do it in favor of Hillary. Absolutely, there's that.
No, what they're doing it in 2016 is against Donald Trump because he's an urgent danger to democracy.
And it's never happened before. And I'm glad that our objective press has made that decision and has decided that for the good of all of us, they're going to direct
by
the
way,
selection.
By the way,
objectivity sucks,
and
it's only conservatives
12,
who want.
And now they're taking it to.
They didn't do it in 2012. They did not. They are doing it now, agonizing about it, and completely transparent.
I seem to remember Candy Crowley helping out Obama during a debate, but
she asked questions, which is what journalists do. And you are going to see Donald Trump complain about the moderators as a way to get out of it because he's also afraid of Hillary Clinton.
Well, how do you know?
Because I read and I'm smart, okay?
Well, I know you're smart, but I also... All right, let's move on.
I know how the press works.
Let's get to some serious letters from Pete. I'm supposed to be on a self-imposed hard news holiday, but tuning in anyway. Just wanted to give props to Ray for the Noam Crosby reference.
Thank you.
Please double down with a Shecky Green mention.
Oh, my gosh.
At Keep It Silly. Okay, there's
Shecky
an important
Green.
One. Okay. I find myself...
Carmen Monica, how about that?
I find myself asking over and over, why did Hillary do that? Simple stuff like her saying, I've been a Democrat all my life, when we, political nerds at least, know that she was the president of Wellesley College Republicans. Why can't she just insert the word adult, as in she's been a Democrat all her adult life, but she rarely does. I hate to think that this is intellectually lazy, but maybe it is.
Interesting.
I think supporters of candidates on both sides ask themselves from time to time, why did my candidate just do that?
Yeah.
Why did they say that?
Well, I mean, Trump, was he a registered Democrat or was he just supporting Democrats all those years?
And Judy says, I love Ray.
Well, there you go, Judy, and I love you too.
Thanks for my morning ride.
Well, all right.
Wow.
You all,
I don't know where to go on that one.
You all rock.
Okay.
We all rock. Okay. Uh-huh. That's good.
All right. Listen.
Ray is clearly the chief rocker.
Now that we have complimented me, can I just bring up this story that I found slightly terrifying from USA Today? The headline is DEA regularly mines Americans' travel records to seize millions in cash. Now, Rosemary, you travel all over the place under suspicious circumstances,
right,
I might add.
Right.
So I'll read you the first paragraph. Federal drug agents regularly mine America's travel information to profile people who might be ferrying money for narcotics traffickers, though they almost never use what they learn to make arrests or build criminal cases. Instead, that targeting has helped the Drug Enforcement Administration seize a small fortune in cash. Did you read that article?
Yeah, I did, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
They should be shut down. We should shut them down.
You sound anti-law enforcement, right.
How is that law enforcement?
Okay, going on.
That's the words of a rich, rich lawyer.
Yeah.
For those who have not read this article, I'll read you one more paragraph. DEA agents have profiled passengers on Amtrak trains at nearly every major U.S. airline drawing on reports from a network of travel industry informants that extends from ticket counters to back offices, a USA Today investigation has found. Agents assigned to airports and train stations singled out passengers for questioning or searches for reasons as seemingly benign as traveling one way to California or having paid for a ticket in cash.
And how many of those passengers do you think were well-dressed white guys in suits? I bet very few. Right? So
I mean
what, do you think that was part of the what they were targeting?
This is a mini NSA scandal. Kudos to the journalists who uncovered it. And no, I have never ferried money or drugs, although I go to the Middle East all the time and sometimes one way to California.
Are we saying never or are we saying in our adult life?
Never.
According to this, go ahead, Alan.
No. I was just going to signal you that I have a doctor's appointment. I have to go.
Really?
But it's nothing anybody
here said.
Well,
you can't wait a minute.
Are you okay?
No.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wait, let's not get too deeply into this.
Well,
oh,
no.
He loves when you get deeply into
this. Do a brain scan. See if they find anything.
That's funny.
The email address here is roundtable at WAMC.org if you want to complain. But if you got to go, Alan, you got to go. He's really going.
I know. Wow.
It's never worked before.
That means we get to do all the talking.
Well, we only have a minute to go.
We always get to do all the talking.
Well played, Dr. C. Now get out. The going on in this article, and they said in the beginning of this that it was a small fortune they seized. According to this article, DEA units assigned to 15 airports, the busiest airports, seized more than $209 million in cash from at least 5,200 people. Most of that money was passed on to local police departments. This is now part of budgets.
Yeah. And they're buying big equipment so that they're militarized. It's just terrible.
So
stop it.
Most of the money ends up being returned, or some of it is returned.
Some.
After years.
Well, a lot of the people just walk away from it, which...
Yeah, which
tells
indicates,
you something,
yeah,
you know,
they may be onto something. But why aren't there criminal charges against those people?
And that's
I don't think they care. The people they take the money, the people don't show up.
Isn't that extortion?
Yeah.
We think you're a drug dealer, give us your own money and we won't see you in court.
Yeah,
isn't that just
whole property seizure before a finding of guilt also. That worries me as well.
Asset seizure, yeah.
So you have never been suspected of anything when you travel? See,
my suitcase gets gone through all the time.
See, one of the things is people, like this one woman had money that from her boyfriend's Roth IRA that he cashed in so she could buy a truck, okay?
Right.
Turned out to be true, and they returned most of the money except for $4,000. But apparently...
Wait, why didn't they return the $4,000?
You make a point.
Because they didn't like... That's a lot of money.
Oh, my gosh.
Out of $25,000.
We're out of time. My point was...
Just
drug-sniffing dogs sniff the money. I think if you sniff most cash in the U.S., a drug-sniffing dog is going to smell drugs.
I was thinking
actually,
the same
good
thing.
Point.
Yeah.
Good point.
All right, we're done for today. Rosemary Armeo, thank you. And Rich, you and Rosemary ought to have coffee. You agreed far too much today. The email address is roundtable at WAMC.org. Thanks to Alan Shartok, who's on the way to his doctor's. Good luck, Doc, and we'll be back.